Hello and welcome to episode 10 of Just Another Priest podcast. I'm Father Kyle Schnipple. I'm a pastor of two parishes on the northwest side of Cincinnati. Thought for this episode of the podcast to take a look at the scripture. How did we develop the canon of scripture? Look into what criteria were used to include certain books in the scripture versus others. How do the Old Testament and the New Testament fit together in some ways in that development as well? What were they looking at in the early church as they developed the scripture? And so with all that, let's get started. The Bible is the most published book in all of history, translated into hundreds of languages, continues to be published and read by millions, if not billions, of people around the globe every day. Yet the origins of this great book are often shrouded in mystery. Why did we get this list of books for the New Testament while other books or letters were omitted from the Bible? Why do Catholics have more books in their Bible than Protestants do? And who was all the author of all these different books too? And so to begin with, the development of the canon of scripture is a long and varied process, much more in depth than what I can cover in just 10 or so minutes. It was not a process where one person sat down and decided, this is the canon of scripture, these things should be included, and everything else gets kicked out. It took place over hundreds of years, and there have been, especially in those early years of the church, there was just a lot of debate about what should be included in the New Testament, what should not be included, even in the Old Testament things. There are some differences between a Catholic Bible and a Hebrew Bible, for example. And it's also important to note that when the New Testament was being written, it's not exactly clear as to whether they knew that they were actually writing scripture, new scripture. For St. Paul, when he refers to the scripture in his writings, he's not referring to his own writings. He's referring back to what we now call the Old Testament, the Hebrew scriptures. That was the only scripture that he knew in his time. And he knew his role in salvation was unique and important and vital. He was to bring the message of Jesus, the message of the gospel to the Gentiles, a very vital role. But did he know that his letters would be collected, copied, shared as widely as they are today? Did he know that they would be included at the same level of the scriptures that he references? And there's a lot of debate and a lot of topic conversation around that matter. And so I'm not really going to dive into that too much. I might come back to that in a later episode. So anyways, back to the topic at hand. To look at the Old Testament development of the scriptures is actually very, very difficult. For one thing, there was a Jewish custom that when the copies of the scriptures that they would use in the synagogue, when those copies became worn and tattered, when they became too overused that they wouldn't be able to be used in the liturgy anymore, they would burn those copies as a sign of respect, and they would get a new copy of the scripture. They would purchase a new copy of the scripture. And because of that, we actually do not have many ancient copies of the text of the Hebrew scriptures. There's one major exception that I'll come back to later. Some of the early copies that we have only date to the second millennium, the Middle Ages. And that big exception is so vitally important, the discoveries of the Dead Sea Scrolls at Qumran. They become so vital because now we can go back in time, as it were, and to see what was contained in the Hebrew canon of Scripture at the time of Jesus. So Qumran was active right around the time of Jesus, his public ministry. And so it gives a really great insight, not only what scripture they have, but some of their other writings. What was Jewish life like in Jesus' time? For Bible nerds like me, this is a life-changing discovery. And the texts themselves are still being studied, pored over. I'd love to get to do more work on them, but I just haven't had the time, unfortunately. And one important fact that we have to acknowledge when looking at how the early church used the Hebrew scriptures is that they did not actually use the scriptures in Hebrew. They used a translation which we now call the Septuagint. the Septuagint version of the Old Testament. And it's named after the number of translators who did that work, 70, Septuagint 70 in Greek. That's the version of the Old Testament that was widely circulated around the Roman world. And when Paul quotes what we call the Old Testament, what he calls the Scripture, he's often quoting the Septuagint Greek version of the Old Testament, not the original Hebrew version. So, now on to New Testament Scriptures. The earliest record that we have of the canon of Scripture, the current list of 27 books of the New Testament, was actually not until St. Athanasius of Alexandria in 367 AD. So 330 years after the crucifixion and death of Jesus. All those books were written long before that, but they hadn't been compiled into one list up until that point. And they had more important pressing things to do than worry about that, which to us is like, what? But they were worried about their lives so much. If they gathered together to discuss what should be included, what shouldn't be included, they could be arrested and killed off, which would wipe out the whole leadership of the church, which would not be a good thing. But there were certain criteria that Athanasius used that had been handed on to him as far as what letters, what books, what things should be included in the New Testament, how to discern the 27 books of the New Testament versus what should not be included. And there were three basic criteria that they used. The first, they had to be of apostolic origin. They had to come from the apostles. So Ignatius of Antioch lived shortly thereafter, shortly after the apostles, and he wrote, there are seven letters of his that still exist today, that existed, that had a wide circulation at the time, but because Ignatius of Antioch is not one of the apostles, not one of the apostles of Jesus, his letters, great though they are, and still valuable to read for us today, they're not included in the canon of Scripture because he's not an apostle. The second criteria, they had to have a wide acceptance and not just be popular in one city. There is evidence that St. Paul wrote at least a third letter to the Corinthians, that he wrote other letters as well, but those other letters never achieved a wide distribution as his letters that are included in the Scripture are. And so those other letters are not included. And we've seen some, they found a few fragments of other things attributed to St. Paul, but nothing major. Only the 14 or so letters of his in the New Testament really achieve that wide acceptance, that wide popularity. And finally, the third criteria is that that letter or book had to reflect the faith that had been handed down to us from Jesus through the apostles. And so the Gospel of James is of apostolic origin. It was widely circulated, and it has a wonderful little story to it. And from the Gospel of James, that's where we get the name of Mary's parents, Joachim and Anne. But it does not reflect the image or the picture wholly. It doesn't reflect the universal picture that we have of Jesus and of Mary that the early church knew. So while it was an important book, it's not included in the Scripture either. So those three criteria: apostolic origin, wide acceptance, and a universal faith, reflection of the universal faith. And now I say that first point, apostolic origin, and I look at the Gospels and I think, two of them are not apostles. So how are they included? Matthew and John, obviously apostles, they're listed among the 12. But what about Mark and Luke? They are not. St. Irenaeus of Lyon, who wrote at the end of the 2nd century, handled that question in the following way. Matthew also issued a written gospel among the Hebrews in their own dialect, while Peter and Paul were preaching in Rome and laying the foundations of the church. After their departure, Mark, the disciple and interpreter of Peter, did also hand down to us in writing what had been preached by Peter. Luke also, the companion of Paul, recorded in a book the gospel preached by him. Afterwards, John, the disciple of the Lord, who had also leaned upon his breast, did himself publish a gospel during his residence at Ephesus in Asia. And so we see in that, in Irenaeus, Matthew's gospel was, there is some evidence that it's still evidence that we have today, that it was originally written in Aramaic. The terminology that he uses is often Aramaic and Hebraic, and that it was later translated into Greek. Mark is the transcriber for Peter, so that apostolic origin that Mark claims is through Peter. Luke is the companion and author of Paul, so his apostolic origin is St. Paul. And then John, we know, he wrote his gospel after a long period of time of reflection on who Jesus is, what he came to do. And one final point about the canon of Scripture, that question about why Catholic Bibles are bigger than Protestant ones. When Martin Luther went about the Reformation in the 1600s, early 1600s, 500 years ago now, he wanted to go back to the original languages for the Scripture and do a new translation. And when he looked for a Hebrew original of six books in the Old Testament, Tobit, Judith, Baruch, Sirach, which is also known as Ecclesiasticus, Wisdom, 1st and 2nd Maccabees, plus there were a few additions to Esther and Daniel, he could not find a Hebrew original text. So he labeled them, he's the first one to come up with the term, quote, deuterocanonical. And he labeled those books as deuterocanonical, a second canon, a second level of Scripture. And he removed them from the canon of Scripture. So hence, Protestant Bibles are shorter. They removed books. Catholics didn't add them in. The Protestants removed them from the Catholic canon of Scripture. What becomes interesting, though, and a fun little fact, going back again to Qumran and why it continues to be so important, they found at Qumran a Hebrew text of the book of Sirach. And if you read the introduction to the book of Sirach, there's a prologue that tells it's a translation of a Hebrew original. The translation into Greek is what got circulated, but that Hebrew original still existed, and it was found at Qumran at the Dead Sea Scrolls. It's not a complete text, but it is a significant portion of that text. And so again, I just include that as a fun little point to keep in mind that, which just goes to prove the church, she knows what she's talking about. And when we bounce into things that we think, she might actually know more than I know. And so with that fun little fact, I'll bring this episode to a close. Please be sure to follow me on Twitter. At Father Schnipple, Father written out, Schnipple, S-C-H-N-I-P-P-E-L. Subscribe to the podcast. And if you can, please leave me a review in iTunes or in the Google Play Reader. I greatly appreciate it. It helps other people find the podcast as well. God bless, and I will talk to you next week. Bye-bye.